It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on, Peter Carlin and the top five. Scotty, should I be answering whatever these calls are? Or? Okay, I guess not. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, prophet, seer, and revelator. He's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Bridge will be closed tonight into Tuesday for a movie screw. Let me update that. The Broadway Bridge will be closed tonight into Tuesday for a movie crew.
Well, that's less interesting.
It is. But who knows? It's late at night, and you know how these Hollywood people are.
They might change it back.
Only one traffic lane will be closed from 8 to 9. But after that, well, who knows? Our crews are working on the bridge to film the motion picture Untraceable. It'll not affect bicyclists, pedestrians, or river traffic, so go down and take a look. Later this month, the bridge will be closed several other times for filming and production.
Fantastic.
Let's do a corpse watch.
Here's your corpse watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Doing things that's better left alone.
Here. This was from Kennewick, of all places.
Really?
Yeah. In hours fact. After he was arrested for investigation of harassment of his estranged girlfriend and then released, a man was shot to death by Kennewick police as he stabbed her in the neck. The officers used chemical spray on Marlon St. Mark Germain, who had a long record of violence, but the 6-foot-tall, 250-pound man refused to back down and was actually, quote, sticking the knife into the female when the shot was fired, unquote. That according to police.
Marlon St. Mark Germain?
Yes, Marlon St. Mark Germain.
Somebody's parents.
Is there a picture?
He's 34.
Somebody named him out of order.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you knew him.
Maybe I went to school with him. I don't believe so.
He died at Lourdes Medical Center in Pasco. Where's that? Pasco.
Pasco.
Okay.
Oh, then I probably didn't know him.
Let's see.
I don't go to Pasco. Pasco is the Gresham of Kennewick.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, the officer who bombed the lone shot said he was trained and did what he needed to do. It appears the officers acted within the scope of their duties.
Well, seriously, stabbing somebody in the neck, that's a shooting. That's what that is. That's stabbing in the neck, that's a killing.
Mm-hmm.
And a night in the box.
Let's see here. Arrest charges varied from harassment to disorderly conduct to vandalism. And apparently he spray painted something, somebody on the back once.
And he's dead?
Yes.
Good, screw it.
Part two. A first-class passenger in a flight between Delhi and London woke to find a corpse of a woman who had died in the economy cabin placed in the seat next to him.
Pardon me, we need to stick this in. Can you move your legs?
Exactly, what? That's what happened. The economy section of the flight was full, and the cabin crew needed to move the woman and her grieving family out of the compartment to give them some privacy. The first-class passenger, Paul Trinder, tells the Sunday Times that he was sleeping during the flight from India, and he woke up when the crew placed a dead woman in the empty seat next to him. I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Did she die on the plane?
Was she already dead?
Yeah, dead on the plane. The stewards just plunked a dead body down without saying a thing. I remember looking at this frail, sparrow-like woman and thinking she's very ill.
Because of not breathing and so forth.
When I asked what was going on, I was shocked to hear that she was dead.
Well, when they die, their bowels evacuate.
About 10 passengers die each year in flight. And while each situation is dealt with on an individual basis, safety is paramount. The deceased must not be placed in the gallery or blocking aisles or exits.
Well, they're easy to step over.
And there needs to be a clear space around the deceased.
And you can't put him in one of those emergency exit rows either. They're terrible at opening doors. Why don't we hear about this if this happens 10 times a year?
10 times a year, believe it or not.
You know, true story that happened to Alice Cooper. The first time Alice Cooper was going to Britain, he was going to Britain to play Wembley, and I'm pretty sure it was, and he was already really, really huge over there. He's on the plane flying to Britain. The woman next to him is like, hey, I'm going to sleep. If the food tray comes around, don't wake me or whatever. And he's like, oh, okay. They land at Heathrow or whatever the hell that is. They land at the airport in Britain, and he goes to wake her up, and he nudges her. Nothing. She's dead. She died on the flight over. And how great is this if you're Alice Cooper in about 1972? He gets off the plane, and I think it was at Heathrow. He gets off the plane. They're bringing a dead woman out on a stretcher in front of him. And all the press are like, what happened? And he's like, I don't know. She sat next to me, and now she's dead. And then he just, like, stared at the cameras. It's the best possible way you could ever enter Britain as a rock star. Well, that's fantastic. And so why didn't they just leave her where she was sitting if she was dead?
To let the family grieve peacefully.
Well, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen, and the remainder doesn't seem like an airplane is really the opportune place to
that
grieve.
That is so weird. So she dies, then her family's busy
grieving. Why does somebody else have to pay the price for that? It seems like, okay, whatever.
She went out in first class.
Sparrow-like woman. That's fantastic.
And one more here. Investigators in the District of Columbia returned to a wooded area across from a 7-Eleven where it is believed a human skull was found. Witnesses said a homeless man who sometimes panhandles at the 7-Eleven showed up with a head in a plastic bag and threw it in a large trash bin. The witnesses fished the head out of the trash and put it on some bushes and then called the authorities. And I take a closer look at what had a baseball hat on it. Oh, my God. The skull had a baseball cap on it.
It was a jaunty skull.
Mm-hmm. It was still fitting rather tightly and still had some skin on it.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
It still had some skin on it.
I have nothing more to say about this.
Except that where would a homeless guy have gotten
a skull with a baseball cap?
Did he get it from the source? I mean, is that...
We didn't get a skull with a baseball cap. We should ask for that next.
I'm still unclear about whether it's illegal that we own that skull.
We don't actually own it. It was a gift.
That makes it okay. If it's sort of like a one-time... It's like a taxes. It's like a one-time non-taxable gift of $10,000. The guy came by and gave us that human skull, George, a couple weeks ago. And several people have weighed in that it is actually against the law for us to possess that. I am really curious about these things. If anybody knows, just for my own...
We always give it to the museum.
This guy raises a good point. If she was a tiny little sparrow-like woman, why couldn't they just put her in the overhead? Seriously, I don't mean to sound cruel, but why... No, seriously, why wouldn't you just... Or why wouldn't you stick her in one of the lavatories? Stick her in one of the bathrooms.
Because people need the overhead compartment space and the lavatories.
But there's three bathrooms. You go down to two as opposed to putting a dead woman up in the seat next to some guy.
That is pretty funny. If they find some guy who looks like he's going to sleep through the entire flight, just
seriously.
Stick her next to him.
I think he's out cold. Prop her up. All right, then there's your corpse watch for Monday. On the
I'm digging up.
That we should try to get a couple other watches in this segment because we're so painfully, terribly behind. And then we'll at the bottom of the hour, we have Peter Carlin here. I may or may not get Scotty's top five done today. I can't believe we're almost done. Doesn't it seem like we just started the show?
Yes.
This whole day is craziness. All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
The Spartan Battle Epic 300 held tough at the box office for its second weekend, zooming well past 100 million to become the biggest hit of the new year. On the heels of the record-setting opening, the Warner Brothers film grossed an additional $31.2 million in the U.S. and Canada. The movie had set a March record for grossing $70.9 million its first weekend, dropping 56% by staying well ahead of the competition. The crazy science-splitting comedy Wild Hogs came in second, followed by three new releases, Sandra Bullock's thriller Pandemonium, or that promotion, or...
Promotion.
Whatever it is. The horror flick Dead Silence and the Chris Rock comedy drama I Think I Love My Wife.
I don't even know what Dead Silence is.
Yeah, nobody knows what this stuff is.
All right.
Is that the one with the puppets?
I don't know.
You're looking at me as though that's a joke I'm supposed to get.
No, it's not a joke. There's something with like talking dolls.
A horror movie with puppets?
Yeah, and dolls.
I think you're making that up.
300
is really good, though. I really... It's not a flawless movie. And the problem I have with 300. The only problem I have with 300 is that just thematically it's so similar to so many other films. Everybody compares it to Gladiator. I think probably the more apt comparison is to Braveheart. It is very similar to Braveheart. It is sort of... 300 is sort of like an energy drink version of Lord of the Rings, where it's just all of the, like, if you were to take Lord of the Rings and just, like, all 9 hours of that film, or 12 hours, or whatever it is, of Lord of the Rings, the whole trilogy, if you were just to edit down that movie, cut away all of the backstory, all the love scenes, all the character development, and just edit Lord of the Rings into just a lot of, like, hard guy, badass sound bites, and then battle sequences... That's 300. That's what it is. It's like all of the battle sequences and really like macho exchanges of dialogue from Lord of the Rings isolated down and made into its own movie. It is a beautiful looking film, though. It really is. I mean, the movie, just aesthetically speaking, and it's all green screen. There's no actors in front of it. It's like Sky Captain. There are no real sets, no real props. It is a beautiful looking film. It really is like a big moving work of art. There are sequences, and one of them is in the trailer, so I'm not giving anything away. When the guy says, you know, our arrows will blacken the sky or turn the sky to night or whatever. And there's a sequence where, from the perspective of the Spartans, you see this army of like 40,000 all firing their arrows at once, and it does blot out the sun. And it is just breathtakingly beautiful. It's just a beautiful film. And there's a bunch of really great, cool, again, like sort of really hyper-masculine tough guy sound bites and so forth. It's really violent, though. Seriously, if you're not into seeing a lot of spurting limbs and bloody stumps and so forth, you should stay far away from it. I will tell you this, though. I saw it with my wife. And she was on the phone later with a female friend of hers talking about the movie. I'll tell you what, chicks will dig this movie because it's just hundreds and hundreds of shirtless men with six packs.
I know, they look all greasy and hot.
Yeah. Well, I hope they don't sit in this spot.
No, but movie, okay. So
it's just greasy.
Is the movie we're talking about with the Dead Silence? That one?
Yeah.
It's a ventriloquist whose puppets come to life and try to kill him. And
really?
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Okay, well, fair enough. Anyway, if you just like oiled up hot guys, you might be into that. If you like blood, you might be into that. It is a pretty cool distillation of like sort of projected male aggro. I mean, it does have a lot of really cool. And the guy Xerxes or whatever, who's like the Persian king or whatever, he's pretty messed up and freaky. So it's a good. I give it a real, real strong thumbs up. So, and then, and let me just say this. Here is why, even if 300 had not been a good film, which it was, again, I give it, like, on the classic 1 to 10 scale, I give it, like, a 7.5. 7.5 or maybe an 8. But the trailer for Grindhouse plays before it. And let me just tell you, man, you want to talk...
That looks so weird.
Oh, it looks so great. Now, you know the deal with that, right?
No, I have no idea. All I saw was Rose McGowan with a machine gun leg.
Okay, here's the deal with Grindhouse. Here's why it's going to be the best experience of the entire year. It is this year's...
I don't know.
Revenge of the Sith. It is this year's Snakes on a Plane. It is this year's whatever. All the geeks are going to be camped out. So the deal with Grindhouse, because Grindhouse is one of those movies that you may have heard more about it than you have about it. In other words, you may have heard more buzz about the film than you may actually know about what the film is. Grindhouse is a modern-day tribute to a lot of so-called exploitation films or sort of B films from back in the 70s, which is, it's not like I'm some film historian, so I don't pretend to be like the definitive source of knowledge in this. A guy like my friend Siegfried, he'd be the guy to ask about this. But you know, all of those really cheaply made, really trashy, violent, hyper-sexual, like really aggressive, sort of action-packed films from the 70s, sort of, you know, kind of like Roger Corman films and some of those Pam Grier movies from the 70s. That's what this is. So here's the great thing about it. Here's what Grindhouse is. If you've heard people, you know, talking about Grindhouse. Grindhouse is, I mean, it's a single movie that you go to see, but it is two movies back to back. So you sit, in other words, you go in, you sit down, and this Robert Rodriguez film, which is the one that has Rose McGowan with a machine gun for one of her legs, you go in, and it's a whole experience. That's what's going to be so great about Grindhouse. You go in, you sit down, the lights go down, it starts, and the Robert Rodriguez movie plays front to back. Then it finishes, and then they show an intermission. And the intermission is a bunch of trailers for non-existent films, and the trailers are made by people like Rob Zombie. The trailers are for a bunch of other non-existent films in the same genre, and if Grindhouse does well enough, those trailers will be made into the next set of movies. So you go in, you sit down, the Robert Rodriguez movie, which I think is about 75 minutes, plays, then there's like a 10-minute intermission, then the Tarantino film plays. So it is like a virtual double feature. It is a simulated double feature. It's one movie, but it is made to look like a drive-in double feature, where there's one movie, then a bunch of intermission trailers, then a second film.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
The whole thing is about 2 hours long. Did you see the trailer? When the trailer you saw, did it look all artificially aged?
It was pretty late last night. I was half asleep, like drifting out of sleep. But I saw, because I saw a cover of a magazine with Rose McGowan with the machine gun leg,
right.
And it was so weird looking.
Totally.
I really couldn't wrap my mind around it. I didn't know if I thought it was cool looking or not. And then saw that with her, like, lifting it up and shooting. It was just weird.
Now, did the trailer you saw, did it make it look like, did the film look all period pieced? In other words, did it look all dated and artificially aged?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just, it was just a lot of fast action happening. Then it was her, you know, a lot of close-ups on her. It reminded me a lot of Sin City.
Like, I'm unclear about whether the actual movie is going to be this, but when you see the full trailer, the two mini films, Planet Terror and Death Proof, the trailer anyway made it look as though the films were treated electronically to look like old 70s films. They looked all scratched up and grainy, and the film looked a little damaged. But yeah, it is a virtual double feature where one movie plays, and then there's a whole bunch of trailers and an intermission, and then the second movie plays. And that's the great thing about it, is the intermission has all these trailers for movies that don't really exist, but if this makes enough money, they're going to take those little trailers and make them into the next set of films they release for the sequel. And you know, even if it ends up not being all that great, it's just a good idea. It's just cool. It's just ambitious. It's somebody doing something a little different. Even if it doesn't end up being all that great, it's just somebody, Tarantino and Rodriguez, who have a lot of power in Hollywood. You know, it's so great to see people who have, artists who have power, not using it just to make the same old crap. I mean, they're using their clout and their power to make something that is sort of cool, to do something to push the art form a little bit. So anyway, so if you haven't seen the Grindhouse trailer, go see it. See it, see it, see it. All right, let's do one more, and then we'll break here.
All right, in that case,
microphone is off. You know you're correct.
Let's do a geek launch.
Brooks, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Queen Search and Limit, remember you...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but we were wondering if the quantum flux...
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
There it is.
Well, Harry Potter star Emma Watson has reportedly refused to sign up for the last two installments of the series, despite being offered close to $4 million per film to reprise her role as Hermione Granger. The 16-year-old says she is tired of playing Harry Potter's know-it-all pal and wants to try new projects. Matters did not help last week when a stalker followed her into school and managed to talk to her before being warned off campus. Watson has been assigned to a private bodyguard.
I heard about that, by the way.
How scary for her. She's such a tiny little thing, too.
Well, and I mean, we're all adults. We can speak frankly. She's a very attractive young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to disparage my people this way, but she, you know, plays to that geek sci-fi fantasy crowd, and they're crazy. I mean, they're unstable. Not all of them, but I will say this. Like, your average... Here's the thing. Your average sci-fi fantasy dork... That's not what I want to say. Your average... A guy in the sci-fi fantasy community who's a little unstable is way more unstable than, like, a NASCAR fan who's unstable. You know what I mean? Every group, every interest, every kind of activity has a fair share of their base that is a little crazy. But nobody's crazier than sci-fi fantasy crazies. They're the nuttiest of the nutty. And, you know, and it doesn't help that she's hot and she's 16 and they've got this weird attachment to her probably because she's been Hermione Granger in all of these films. So now she's refusing to do the final two, which is going to suck because...
Is it just because she's freaked out by the stalker?
And she's already... I don't want to be typecast, you know, which is...
Too late.
Yeah, I was going to say, too late for that, baby. You got to cash in.
She's tired of being known as the girl from Harry Potter.
Not going to change. Make money while you can. You've been Uhuru'd. Uhuru'd.
She wants more adult roles.
Yeah, well... I'll make that joke in 2 years.
I believe the ages are lower in Britain.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for helping me out there. Anyway, so yeah. that sucks. And apparently, the new Harry Potter film is apparently really good. The early reviews have been fantastic.
Which one is this? Is it Order of the Phoenix?
The new one is going to be Order of the Phoenix. And then she apparently, though, is refusing to be in either Half-Blood Prince or Deathly Hallows when those are made, which sucks. I mean, it's going to suck, but I mean, they already had to replace Dumbledore. So, I mean, you know, whatever. You are expendable, Emma Watson. I mean, I hate to sound all cold about it. You're screwing yourself out of $8 million for nothing because they will replace you with somebody else. And then, you get that reputation of being difficult to deal with. So
she'll be making fish and chips somewhere before you know.
Seriously.
Now, are you for sure that's 100%? Because I saw that, but then I also saw mixed reviews where she was saying that, in fact, she wasn't leaving.
Maybe. It might be a power
play. Well, we kind of like this story anyway.
I prefer this story because it's, more lurid. Mm-hmm. I don't really care whether it's true.
And I think it is, actually.
Rick, the films, this is about Grindhouse. The films were apparently made on the same sort of film and given the same sort of processing treatment as was used back in the 60s as to make them look like those films. The scratches and dust and so forth were added via CG. So that's true. So Grindhouse, when you go to see it, it is going to look all effed up and scratched and dirty like it's a classic 70s
film.
So
what is the premise? Why does she have a machine gun? Like, do you know anything about it?
I've actually tried to not learn anything about the films within the film. I don't want to know. Chris says they even have a classic missing reel in Grindhouse at a plot point where it skips forward to an action part. So at one point, there's apparently even a flaw they've built in, like when you go to see an old movie and the film is messed up and there's a whole section of film missing and it just leaps forward. Apparently that's in this too. It just looks so cool. The trailer just, I don't care whether it ends up being good or not. And it will. I mean, how could it be bad? I mean, it's Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. There's no way. So, I mean, I'll be first in life for that. It doesn't matter. All right. Are we done with that? Is that our Geek Watch?
Yeah, that's our Geek Watch.
All right. I have something else I would like to say, but we're done now.
By the sons of war.
Back after this.
I shall avenge you.
Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Apparently, it's a big, who's that, Huffington, that Huffington Post? Huffington Post sounds like some sort of a cereal that they would sell in Maine. That Arianna Huffington thing, there's some piece about the protest thing. Where they're claiming, what did the news say, 15,000? Well, whatever.
Yeah, 15,000.
Yeah. 503-733-2970. Rick says this email. This is great, by the way. The way this guy got me to open this email, well done, sir. The subject line just says, Britney Spears. Rick, please just go back to talking about pop culture and crap. When you talk about politics, it is from that same superficial level that you dedicate to Anna Nicole Smith and other topics that inundate your show. You do... I keep expecting... I should interject a lot of sirs here. They're sort of implied. You, sir, do no service to politics whatsoever other than to embody the fence-sitting point and laugh idiocy that saturates this country, sir. How far through the looking glass does one have to go before they can laugh at people exercising their right to assemble in the name of peace? No, we're there. We're already at that point, sir. Protesters might not have the answers. They might not be creative. But before you take a dump on a group of people that are taking a stand, think about this, Rick Emerson. Thank God your audience isn't the only voice in this country. Blah, 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 sitting around, pop culture references, blah, blah, blah. Get over yourself, you fence-sitting child.
This is also Books to Prisoners mailing night.
Fantastic.
In Portland, that's at 5. Just so you never forget where you are.
I'll get right on that. I'll get right on that, Glenn. Whatever you say, friend. It's 503-733-2. Not just sadly aware that there's massive amounts of stupidity on both sides, my friend.
And an anarchist study group tonight. Also, basic war tax resistance and redirection. And the struggles for South Korean farmers for land group meets tonight.
Yeah. I'd love to be there, but I've got to go home and surf for pornography on the internet. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Oregonian with a heart full of hate and a head full of nougat. It's Peter Carlin. Hello, sir.
Hey, yo, man.
What's up with you, brother?
Not much. How are you?
Hey, I was just going to say, I'm glad somebody brought this up. Have you seen the movie 300 yet?
Nope.
I will say, I was just talking about 300, and people are trying to put all of this the political crap onto it. They're trying to sort of force this sort of political this relevance to the current political state onto it, which is a bunch of bupkis. But I will say, there's this one. Did you ever see a movie that is otherwise good, but then there's one, like, jarringly bad line in it that just sort of, like, makes your skin crawl?
Yeah.
There is a scene in 300 where, I swear to God, the queen, Leonidas' wife, the queen of Sparta, actually says to someone, she says to this guy, this character, and it's, what's his name? It's McNulty from The Wire.
Oh.
Which is, and I had no idea he was in the movie. Uh-huh. You know, the last time I saw him, he was like a drunk Irish cop in Baltimore. And, you know, and then suddenly he's in like a, you know, he's in a toga. But there's this one sequence of 300 where, I swear to God, she looks at him and says, without a trace of irony, she says, you know, freedom isn't free. And as soon as she said that, it was just sort of like, I was just inexplicably taken out of the movie for about 35 seconds. What's up in the world of Peter Carlin?
What's up? Lordy, I don't know. I went to the Blazers game last night. They suck, by the way. But they, yes, they walked this dude out, you know, like at halftime or whatever, to do that sort of thing where you throw up the shot from half court.
Right, right.
The humiliation game.
Yes.
You go up there and it's like, and they hand you the ball and it's like, there you are at midcourt, and like, nobody can make that shot, right? Like, Michael Jordan can't make that shot,
right,
9 out of 10 times. I mean, and nobody practices that shot, because why? Why would you ever? And so they hand the dude the shot, the ball, and I'm thinking, does he even get a practice? Does he even get, like, a chance to, like, you know, you get a little muscle memory going, you get a general,
sure,
sense of what the thing is, you know? No, they don't. Just, here you go, dude, clock's ticking, you know, let's go. And this is, like, partway through this game where the Blazers are just kind of shuffling around, you know, and nothing's happening.
Just looking,
like,
sadly at their feet.
Yeah, people, exactly. You know, they're just, like, looking at their watches, like, is it May yet, you know? So... But then this dude, he walks up there, and he's just like this dude, and he's got, like, his golf shirt on and his jeans, you know, and all that stuff. And anyway, so then he takes a step. He just hucks the ball. Damn thing went right in. I swear to God, it didn't even touch the rim.
Is that true?
I swear to God.
What do you get for that?
A new car.
That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, except then I began to think, oh, taxes and title, that guy is screwed. It's like when Oprah made all those people go broke and they all lost their homes and had to kill themselves because she gave them all new cars.
That's Peter Carlin making this broad satiric generalization of the fate of Oprah's audience, by the way.
Yeah, it's true.
Hey, well, let me ask you a question. Not to get all bogged down in something that happened 10 years ago that,
okay,
nobody even remembers. What did happen when Oprah gave everybody in the crowd a car?
Well, it turned out they all got hit by these massive tax bills, and so it didn't work out quite as happily as everyone thought. But I think Oprah's show finally did manage to come up with a way where they paid the taxes or they did something nice.
Is that the thing? Like, if you're sitting in the audience and Oprah says, Peter Carlin, I'm going to give you a car.
Yeah.
Like, when you get home, is there, like, because you always hear that story about on The Price is Right, how when you win, like, the IRS guy is literally, like, backstage waiting for you, which is probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if Oprah, if you're in the audience at the Oprah show and she just gives you a car, or that day she gave everybody in the audience a car, like, is that the thing where the man just calls you, like, a week later and is like, hey, cough up $3,000 or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's how it works.
Thanks, Oprah. Thanks for that. And so, but the show did eventually cover those people?
Yeah, I think they did.
All right. Well, are you allowed to, if you win a car or if Oprah gives you a car, are you allowed to just immediately turn around and sell it, do you suppose?
Yeah, totally.
Like this guy who won the car from the half-court throw at the Blazer game? So he can just, if he wins a new car, that is what, like, let's say it's $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
The taxes on that are, you know, whatever, X grand. Can he just immediately, like, go, even maybe back to a dealership? Just he could go back and sell it, like, let's say for 10, probably, and just all pocket most of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that seems like the thing to do. Did you ever see, there was this thing, I don't know, it was probably 8-9 years ago now. It was during a Bulls game, a Chicago Bulls game, where there was a half-court shot for, I want to say it was for like $1,000,000.
Oh, that dude made it, yeah.
And that dude made it. And I remember Jordan coming off the bench and running out and just picking the guy up. And
yeah.
I swear to God, I think Jordan was actually crying.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing. They ought to make a little 15-minute movie about that guy. I'd watch that. Half-court shot, swished it for $1,000,000. And then him and Michael Jordan hugging each other and weeping. It was like the greatest male moment in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, anywho. Hey, your review about this October Roadshow, remember you said it was bad?
Yeah.
But it looks, after reading your review, it looks really terrible. It looks really, really awful.
Doesn't it, though?
In a way that, like, it looks awful in the way that, like, what was that dude, Kevin Williamson, who did Dawson's Creek, what was that show he did as a follow-up to that? Didn't he do The Wastelands or Wasteland? Wasn't that show that he did as a follow-up to Dawson's Creek?
Man, I don't know.
Whatever. It was crap. And this looks to be very much the same kind of crap. Because this is the bad, tortured legacy of 30-something. Is it because of 30-something and Edward Zwick, about every 10 years, we are subjected to a terrible, terrible version of 30-something, and they're never any good. And it's always just the same thing about self-centered people sitting around and having long, tedious conversations, grappling with the horrors of dawning middle age.
Yeah, it really you got to be kind of on your writing game when you do that one, or else everyone wants to strangle you. And that's what's up with this show, man, because they're so, like, that whole thing at the end where the dude is, like, talking about the guy. Everyone who talks to this guy is, like, the most pretentious person ever. You know, even the children talk like English majors,
right?
Like the dumb English majors who you can't, you know, who you want to punch. Myself, for instance. And so he, this kid is asking him about, like, the larger nihilistic, you know, I don't know what it was, but something to do with why he set this last scene at Ground Zero, and, you know, like, which, if you remember correctly, was where, like, thousands of people died.
Right.
And he says, well, no, I just thought it was, like, you know, represented his larger issues. Which is like, you know, oh, so this guy's anxiety, his, like, post-adolescent anxiety, you evoke it at the site where 3,000 people died, like, recently? Like, people died, and, you know, and it's his, like, oh, I don't have a girlfriend, and that's what that's about?
I've got college debt. All right. Well, from the terrible to the good. Much as I hate to ever give publicity to anything else that's on the radio, anything that's not us. This American Life, which is the public radio program, that goes to, what is it, Showtime or HBO?
Showtime.
And you're raving about that.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And who would have thunk it?
I, you know, because those things, those radio to TV transitions are usually pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But usually this is apparently good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's awesome because it's like what they essentially did was that they took, you know, you'd think This American Life is such a fabulous radio show, and they really sort of master that form of, you know, the spoken form and use it to, you know, in really cool, arty ways. And what you don't expect is that they'd be able to find a way to do pretty much exactly that same thing in a totally different way, with pictures too, but that's totally what they've done.
Excellent.
And it's really awesome.
And that's tonight, and then I just, and I know
Thursday night. I don't even know why I ran the review so early, but I did.
So I'm gonna set my TiVo for that. I still have to watch The Riches. It's on my TiVo. I gotta catch up on that. And then I know I ask you this every time we talk, but I have heard that The Sopranos has been pushed back yet again. Is that true?
Not that I heard.
Okay, so
April 8th is what I heard.
April 8th.
Unless something changed, like today, but I haven't seen it.
And then the reason I gotta watch The Riches is apparently there's a great promo for The Shield in it.
Oh, which I've been watching, by the way.
What?
I've got The Shield, like, the whole season right here.
Son of a bitch, why do you, which, the fifth, season six?
Yeah.
Okay, you gotta let Rick Emerson wet his beak?
Well, I'm watching it for my professional purposes.
And then when you're done with that, you can give it to Rick Emerson.
Okay.
Rick Emerson will make it worth your while.
Well, Peter Carlin and Rick can talk about it.
Okay, there you go. Well, my people will talk to your people.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, my
friend.
Just
don't threaten them again. They don't like that.
I'd let you remember, sir, that freedom isn't free. It does, in fact, cost $1.05.
Yeah, and neither, same deal with those Shield DVDs.
Bam, and we're done. Read them in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. It's Peter Carlin. Thank
you,
sir.
Later.
Thanks, man. There you go, Peter Carlin. Let's get a couple final headlines here from Tip Riley, and then we'll break. Genius.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, somebody's worth $182.7 million, and they bought that winning Powerball ticket in Milwaukee. So far, they haven't come forward yet. Winning number is 7, 17, 44, 47, 54. The Powerball number was 3. Well, the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra had planned an appearance based on the popular television program The Dukes of Hazzard, featuring John Schneider and Tom Wolpat. Well, now the orchestra canceled it after learning some of the community members think the show was racist and offensive. What's offensive about it? Apparently, the General Lee had a Confederate flying on the roof. Show over.
The end.
The end.
Fantastic. See you tomorrow. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Tim Riley. It's 503-733-2970. Back after this, it is the Rick Emerson Show. Like us at 3. Don and Mike at 7. You stay there. We return momentarily. Don't go anywhere. My Chemical Romance. We got to get tickets for that at some point.
I know.
Hint. Rick Emerson says, attention CBS Radio, the Rick Emerson Show needs tickets to the My Chemical Romance show. It's 503-733-2970. It's My Chemical Romance. 503-733-2970. What we got, like 8 minutes to kill? What are we going to do? Jerry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, brother?
Question for you.
Yes.
You being the pop culture god that you are.
Putting the cult in pop culture, yes.
None of my friends believe me that there was at one point in time so similar with the premise to The Equalizer called Stingray.
Stingray, The Equalizer, and good reference to comparing it to The Equalizer, a show called Stingray. It sounds familiar, but I don't know that I can tell you what it was about. Hold on a second. Let's on the air. I'm not going to pretend that I necessarily know what I'm talking about, but I will, in fact, endeavor to get the answer for that right now while you listen. Rick Emerson solves pop culture questions while ye wait. Hold on. Sting.
Because Rick Emerson cares.
Because Rick Emerson cares. The Equalizer. The Equalizer was a great show, man. It was that old guy who I think is dead now. Let's see.
Right, but the Stingray was the same premise, I think, just for a more youthful crowd. And he drove a Corvette Stingray. Didn't ask for payments for anything that he helped him. He said, someday I'm going to ask you for a favor.
I do remember that. I think it was a Stephen J. Cannell show, but let me look. Here we go. Starring Nick Mancuso, Stephen J. Cannell. Stingray is the name of a short-lived, and this is from Wikipedia. Stingray is the name of a short-lived NBC television series produced by Stephen J. Cannell. I knew it. It ran from 85 to 87, starred Nick Mancuso, who played the mysterious character known only as Ray, whose trademark was a black 1965 Corvette Stingray. And blah, 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 compared to, much like The Equalizer, those wishing to enlist his services, presumably having, and he did it, and he asked for a favor in return, blah, blah, blah. So there you go.
It's been announced on the radio that I am officially not on crack. I did not make this up or dream it.
No, that is, Jerry, you are not making this up. Stingray ran from 1985 to 1987. And there you go, ran on NBC, and your friends can call me, Rick Emerson, and I will verify this for them, should they not know.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. There you go, that's fantastic. There you go, thank you. Let's see. Carrie, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. I'd heard a rumor that none other than the Jackson 5 were reconstituting, including Michael. Have you heard anything to that effect?
This is Rick Emerson Answers Your Pop Culture Queries. They have been offered $500 million, and yet, because I'm retarded, I know the answers. $500 million has reportedly been offered to the Jackson family to reunite for a Jackson 5 reunion. It's unknown whether or not any or all of them have said yes, although one can't imagine that Tito and Jermaine are sitting around with a whole lot to do these days. So I would imagine, as always, the wild card is probably Michael. But $500 million is $100 million. Is it? 500? Yes, it is. It's $100 million. Hello, I'm an idiot.
$500 million?
Yeah. There's five. That's 100. Yeah. So, I mean, this is $100 million each. So that's a pretty strong inducement.
Michael's losing most of his... isn't he losing his Beatles collection? And, I don't know.
He has staggering amounts of personal debt. That's the thing that Michael Jackson has. Neverland Ranch for sale. He's got legal debts he still hasn't paid. He was kicked out of the country of Bahrain because he wasn't paying any of his bills there. So Michael Jackson certainly needs the money. And he, you know, and I mean, a Jackson 5 reunion would be pretty huge. They were monsters in their day. They were gigantic. So $500 million has purportedly been offered. They have not responded one way or the other. So
is John Merrick up for sale?
I'm sorry?
is the body of John Merrick up for sale?
I think that's an urban legend. I don't even know that Michael Jackson ever really owned the bones of John Merrick. I think he attempted to buy them, but I'm pretty sure that the bones of John Merrick actually were never really purchased by him in the end. I believe they are still in the I'm pretty sure they're still owned by a British museum. I don't think Michael Jackson was ever able to obtain them.
Wow. You are the pop info god, Rick. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. You call us anytime. You spread the word, my friend.
I always do, every day.
Thank you, sir. There you go. That's Harry. All right. Yeah, Michael Jackson attempted to buy the bones of John Merrick, the Elephant Man, but I don't believe he was ever able to successfully do so. Let's see. What do we have here? Rick. I'm just going to get to some of these emails. It's really all we have time for here. Rick, I know it's late in the show, but did you see the three-way tie story from the Jeopardy game show? I did see that on Friday's Jeopardy for the first time in the... I am such a goddamn loser.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed at how retarded I am. Yeah, on Friday, and yet, I'll plunge on ahead. Friday, for the first time in the show's, I don't know, like 29-year history or something, there was a three-way tie at the end of Jeopardy. All of the contestants tied with $16,000, which was the first time that they've ever had a three-way tie in the history of that program. So, I did see that, sir. Thank you for pointing that out.
Were you actually watching it, or did you just read about it?
I just read about it. I don't really watch Jeopardy because it makes me angry. It makes me angry. The same reason I couldn't watch like Rock and Roll Jeopardy. I can't watch any of those programs because I'm just not to be all about me. But I'm very. I'm very good at those. It's like do your friends go to trivia night?
Yeah, I do sometimes.
And I can't. I can't go to trivia night. Because I take it way too seriously. Lara's taken me to Trivia Night a couple of times, and it just, I take it so seriously that it just, it's no fun. Like, I become, and I'm not a really competitive guy, like, I don't play sports that often, really. Not really since I was a kid. I mean, I would play, like, really casual sports, or like,
I can't picture it at all.
No, as I'm saying, very, very rarely, like, do I ever do anything like that bowling thing? Stuff like that, if I have no choice, I will engage in a sporting activity. But when it comes to those trivia nights, I take it so seriously that, like, not only can I not have any fun, but the people that are around me don't have any fun. The last time Lara took me to trivia night, it was at the basement pub, and I was so serious, and I was just taking, it was like as serious as a heart attack with me, and I was just so angry every time we would miss one. Like, I was just filled with rage every time I would think, that every time I thought that an opposing team had gotten some right by guessing, I would just be, and I would like, she took me a couple, and I was just, like, angry at myself the rest of the night if I got, like, I got a kiss question wrong, and I, for, like, days, I was angry at myself. Just watching, stupid Rick, stupid, you know, just feeling self-loathing about it. So I can't do those. No, I can't watch Jeopardy. I can't go to trivia nights. I can't do any of that. Let's see. What else do we have here? This is Steve. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi, sir.
Hello.
What's up?
I can barely hear you, Rick.
Hi. Hello.
That's better.
Okay.
I've got a question. Lancelot Link and the evolution, I believe.
Lancelot Link, secret chimp.
Yeah, the talking chimpanzee.
Yes, sir.
At 9 o'clock every Saturday morning. That was the coolest little show.
Yes, sir.
I wonder if we can get that on syndication anywhere.
I think it's actually coming out on DVD. I may be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure Lance Link, Secret Chimp, is coming out on DVD.
God, I remember getting stoned on Saturday morning and watching that and cracking up laughing.
Attention, advertisers. You too can reach this prime demographic. Thank you, Steve.
Yep, bye-bye.
There you go. Steve's the final call today. All right, we want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Jim Roop and Lisa Goddard, as well as Clyde Lewis and Peter Carlin for the Oregonian. Coming up tomorrow, Dennis Pitzenbarger, the top five, and a major announcement, so be listening for that. The Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely, talented Sarah Stone for AM970 Columbus State Radio. Tim, Scotty, myself, see y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
I don't feel no ways tired.